The Conference Committee on Senate File 1047 will be in order. Today is Thursday, April 14th. And I believe we have all the members here. Maybe we're still missing one from both sides. Not sure. Maybe not. Oh, Senator Vanderveer won't be here tonight. Welcome, everybody. I think what we're going to do, I'd like to do right out of the chute, so if somebody doesn't know somebody, I'd like to do a real short introductions, and I think we'll start over there with Representative Anderson.
Representative Bruce Anderson, represent Wright County, the northwest corner, and glad to be back on a conference committee. So looking forward to
Thank you.
The results.
Representative Mike Benson, representing District 30B, which is the southern end of Olmsted and the eastern side of Olmsted and the southern tip of Wabashaw County.
My name is Kirk Stensrud, and I represent part of Eden Prairie and Minnetonka.
Keith Downey, District 41A, which is most of Edina.
Mark Shepard from the House Research Department.
Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Staff. And Donna O'Neill, CLA, the House Finance Committee.
Joe Marble, Committee Administrator for the House State Cup Finance Committee.
Representative Maury Lanning from Moorhead and Chair of the State Government Finance Committee here in the House. Welcome to the House.
Paul Gazelka from District 12, which is Brainerd, Little Falls, and the rest of God's country.
Dave Thompson, District 36, which is Lakeville, Farmington, and a number of the smaller towns and townships east and south of Farmington.
Ted Daly, Egan, a little bit of Burnsville, enjoying this new microphone deal here. We don't have this over in the Capitol.
And I'm Kevin Lundeen, the fiscal analyst.
Tom Bodern, Senate counsel for the State Government Committee.
Elizabeth DeBeck, the CLA for the Senate Committee.
And Lucas Nessie, the CA for the State Government Committee
in
the Senate.
And Mike Perry, District 26, Owatonna, Faribault, Waseca, Chair of the State Government Innovation and Veterans. Welcome, everybody, and it's great to get underway and get started with this conference committee here as we go through Senate File 1047. Just a little housekeeping here for the folks. First of all, everyone at the table, because we're being recorded and because I understand that you need to use the microphone for some of these folks in the audience, please be aware of that. Staff, same thing as we're going through here. Let's make sure that we use the microphone so everybody can hear us clearly. The intent for this very first meeting of the conference committee is to do a side-by-side comparison. And we'll have each of our staffs help us go through this side-by-side so we can compare where the House and the Senate fall. My intent here is not to do anything other than that, because I think we need to take some time for the members here to ask questions, if they have some questions on the comparisons. And then once we're done and we're comfortable, then I'll ask Representative Lanning to give us his idea for the next scheduled meeting and what he plans to move forward on that. So I think with that, I think I will start with our fiscal analyst here. And if we want to, and by all means, we can go back and forth between the two. You two don't fight often, do you? You just okay. So we'll Mr. Lundeen over here does have an extra Tootsie Roll. So if you get bogged down and want a Tootsie Roll, I'm sure he'll throw it over to you. So why don't we get underway, Mr. Lundeen? We'll let you start this.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I've spoken with Ms. Robertson. We're going to kind of go back and forth on the various items in the spreadsheet. But I'll start with we're using the change item spreadsheet that I think everybody should have in front of them. And it, starting at the top is the legislature. And the first is the Senate, the operating budget reduction. The Senate took a 5% reduction, and the House made an 8% reduction to the Senate budget. Moving down to the House, both the House and Senate took a 5% reduction to the operating budget. The Legislative Coordinating Commission, the Senate did provide some money, $120,000 a year, for the zero-based budgeting sunset commission bill. And then moving down to the operating budget for the LCC, the Senate made a 15% cut and the House made a 10% cut. And
and members, I should note, for the House position on the LCC, the House bill does include the language for the zero-based budgeting and Sunset Commission, but there's not a rider setting aside funding for that. Moving down to the constitutional officers, for the governor, the Senate has a 15% reduction. The House has an 8% reduction. For the state auditor, the Senate has a 20% reduction, and the House has a 12% reduction. The House did not direct how that reduction would be allocated, and I'll let Mr. Lundeen talk about the Senate position on that. Moving down to the Attorney General, the Senate has a 15% reduction, the House has a 12% reduction, and for the Secretary of State, the Senate again has 15%, and the House has an 8% reduction.
Yeah, and just to comment on the state auditor, we did make the 20% cut to all of the divisions there, and we did make the cut to the audit division, and that does result in a reduction of revenue back to the general fund, and later in the spreadsheet you'll see that reflected. There is an impact of a little over $1 million to the general fund. And then moving down to the state agencies, starting on line 21, we have the Campaign Finance Board, and generally I think the difference between the Senate and the House on a lot of these boards was the Senate generally cut them 5% and the House cut 10%. So as you go down, Investment Board, Administrative Hearings. Then when we get down excuse me, to some of the agencies, the Office of Enterprise Technology, there was a 15% cut by both the House and the Senate. The Department of Administration, the operating budget there in the House took a 13% reduction, and the Senate was a 15% reduction. And then turning over to the next page and looking at line 35, the next differences are with public broadcasting. Public television, the Senate made a 20% cut to this grant, and the House made a 10% cut. NPR, the Senate made a cut of 68%, and the House made a cut of 15%. I should point out that under the Senate, there is a rider in the bill that is directing $77,000 a year, which is the amount of funding that the Senate provided, and it's to go towards the emergency Amber Alert system upgrades. And then moving down to the AMPERS radio stations, the Senate made a 5% cut, and the House did not. And then the Twin Cities cable channel, the Senate totally eliminated that appropriation, and the House made no change to it. Next is the Capital Area Architectural Board, and there was a 5% cut there for the Senate and a 10% again for the House.
Moving on to Minnesota Management and Budget, you'll see on line 48 is where the operating budget reduction is, with the Senate having a 15% reduction and the House a 13% reduction. Right above that, you'll see that the Senate has allocated money for, first of all, for Senate File 81, which is the workforce reduction bill. The House also has that language in the bill for House File 4, that's Representative Downey's bill. And again, the Senate allocated $1.2 million for the zero-based budgeting, and again, the House has the language in there but hasn't specified an amount for that. Moving down to the Department of Revenue, you'll see here's one of the largest differences in terms of the direct reductions. On line 55, the difference between the House and Senate is $18.8 million. Both the House and Senate have a direct operating budget reduction to the department. The Senate is at 9%. The House has a 15% reduction, but then adds in additional funding related to tax analytics and additional compliance. So the net reduction for the House between those, the cut and then the additional funding, is 2%. Moving down to the Gambling Control Board, both the House and Senate have the governor's recommendation to reduce the appropriation from the special revenue fund to align with the fee revenue that is coming in. And both have funding from the lottery prize fund for the problem gambling grant. I should know it says House File XXX, but that's actually House File 886, and we will correct that. And to finish off, the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission, again, you'll see here is a small agency where the Senate cut them 5%, and the House has a 10% reduction. For the councils, starting with the Indian Affairs Council, the Senate has a 13% reduction and the House has a 15% reduction. Moving on to the next page, you'll see the differences for the remaining councils are a 20% reduction for the Senate and the House having a 15% reduction, and then I'll let Mr. Lundin explain the other Senate provision related to this.
Okay, and related to the three councils, the Chicano Latino, the Asian Pacific, and the Black Minnesotans, those dollars were then transferred to the Humanities Center where they would be given out as grants. The dollars are appropriated to the Humanities Center, and then they would give out grants to these three organizations. And then moving down, Explore Minnesota Tourism, you can see on the operating budget, the Senate did a 15% cut, the House did a 10% cut. The Senate on line 76 did put in $100,000 in the first year for the film's job production program, the Snowbait program. And then moving down to the Historical Society, the operating budget reduction there, the Senate made a 10% reduction and the House made a 12%. And then there's a number of grants that go through to the organizations listed there. And the Senate made a 10% reduction and the House made a 12% reduction to those organizations. On line 87, moving down to the Minnesota Arts Board, both the House and Senate made a 20% cut to the base budget. And then moving down to the Humanities Center, the Humanities Center's budget, the Senate cut 5% and the House cut 10%, and then you can see the money from the three councils are transferred in there and then will be given out as grants to these councils by the Humanities Center.
Moving on to page 4, for the Public Facilities Authority, this is the Small Technical Grant Assistance Program. The Senate has a 5% reduction while the House eliminated funding for that program. For the Science Museum, the Senate has a 15% reduction, and the House also has a 15% reduction. On line 102, the House has a 80% reduction to the general fund contingent account appropriation. This is an appropriation that's made to have some funding for emergencies when the legislature is not in session. On line 104, the Minnesota State Retirement System, the House is suspending for just the next biennium the appropriation from the general fund for legislative retirement program. This program is for legislators who were elected prior to 1997. The program is a pay-as-you-go program. And prior to 2003, the legislature would each year or each budget appropriate the estimated amount for the lifetime benefit for those legislators who were retiring or projected to retire during that period. In 2003, as part of the budget cutting efforts, the change was made, so now the appropriation is only for the estimated annual benefit for that program, which means the obligation was stretched out until the last member is no longer with us, as opposed to when the last member retired. But as a result of those contributions or those increased appropriations that were made prior to 2003, MSRS does have a small balance in their fund that would allow us to suspend this appropriation for 2 years. But it's a temporary budget cutting solution. Moving on to military affairs, the House and Senate both provide funding for the tuition reimbursement increase in the amount of $3 million. I should note the spreadsheet here needs to be corrected for the House side. The House did appropriate all of the money in the first year, which makes it a one-time appropriation. And we have corrected that on the online versions of the spreadsheet, but didn't want to have to copy all the spreadsheets again to make that correction. Moving on to Veterans Affairs, the House and Senate are very similar. They both provide funding for the higher education veterans program and the additional funding for the Fergus Falls and the Minneapolis daycare that was requested by the department. And I'll let Mr. Lundin explain the other change.
Okay, on line 112, what the Senate did was we put a two-year cap on the GI Bill open appropriations. We picked this up. This was a recommendation in a report to the legislature from the Department of Veterans Affairs. And kind of the rationale behind it was with the passage of the federal GI Bill, kind of the need for the state dollars isn't as great as it was. And so we put the cap on there for $500 a year. So, and if you look on the bigger spreadsheet, you can see the amount that's forecasted. And then the Higher Education Veterans Program, both the House and the Senate have that funded. The Senate did put that in as a one-time for this biennium. And then on line 115, the grant to MACV coming from the Support Our Troops account, both the House and the Senate have that. And if you move down to the expenditure changes starting on line 118, you can see looking at the general fund, the Senate is cutting a little over $65 million from the budgets we just went through, and the House is cutting almost $47 million. So it's a difference of about $18.5 million more that the Senate was cutting. And then it's similar in the other items. Special revenue were the same, and the lottery prize fund appropriation. The next items are moving down to line 123, and this is where we get into some of the more general reductions that aren't just hitting the agencies in this bill, but other agencies throughout state government. And we've approached it a little bit differently. The way it was done in the Senate, we listed out the various bills that are included in this reduction to the executive and judicial branch agencies. The first is the Senator Daley's bill, the 15 by 15 reduction in FTEs. And to achieve the 15% was we would achieve a fourth of that every year going out over the two bienniums. The House did include this, and maybe I'll let Ms. Roberts talk about the approach that was taken in the House.
If you look at the bottom of page 4 and then moving on to page 5 on the House side, where you see included in general reduction, that means the House bill does include language related to those provisions. And the House has, in Section 37 of the bill, an almost $95 million general reduction, which uses these various bills as potential tools to meet that reduction. But they're not specifically referenced by section, and there's also an issue of possibly double counting within those. So what the language of the bill just says is there needs to be a $94.875 million reduction using these various provisions to help you reach that. So that's why it's presented that way. I should also note on the going back to page 4 on the 15% FTE reduction, the House has slightly different language in that 12% of the reduction has to occur in the first biennium. And then moving on to page 5, the first item at the top of the page is the reduction to deputy and assistant commissioners. And I should, the difference between the language items is that the Senate includes legislative liaisons.
And then the next item on the spreadsheet came from Senate File 805. This was a bill that was presented to our committee by Senator Hahn. And this is taking the current CGIP program and kind of converting it to a healthcare savings account. And so by doing this, we are saving about $151 million for the biennium. It's split on the spreadsheet in two places. On line 130, this is the amount, the $144 million reduction. This is applying to the judicial and the executive branch agencies. And then if you go down to line 144, there's another about $6.7 million reduction, and that's the legislative portion of the reduction. The legislature makes up about 1.42% of the entire CGIP program. So right here, you're just looking at the general fund dollars that are being saved. And then down on line 132 is the CGIP dependent healthcare audits. and that both the House and the Senate have those initiatives. In the Senate, we're starting immediate implementation of that. And then moving down to line 134 is the state employee salary freeze. That language is included in both bills. And then the Senate includes, this was Senate File 907. This was a bill of Senator Nelson's. And this is dealing with the state building efficiency and the fleet management savings for a total savings of 6.7 for the biennium. And then moving down on line 138 is the strategic sourcing bill. And this is saving just slightly more than $46.2 million. And so when all these total up, it totals up to the $302.1 million. And there is language in the bill directing to make a cut to the judicial and executive branch agencies in this amount based on, you know, using these various proposals here to get at the $302 million. And then the next is the reduction to the legislature based on the conversion to the health care savings account. And then moving down the spreadsheet to some of the revenues and transfers that are going on. The first is a state auditor. This was the loss of revenue due to the cut in the audit practice, since there won't be as many auditors out there, and the fees are a non-dedicated receipt to the general fund. The next items we picked up starting on line 152 were some items that were recommended in the governor's budget, and this was a transfer from these three funds that the Department of Administration was closing up, and there were some dollars left. The resource recovery funds, these operations ended last September, and so there was a bit of revenue left from the sale of equipment and some of the recyclable materials. So this is being transferred to the general fund. The same with the office supply connections. There were some changes there where purchases would be made directly from the vendors, and so the amount of money left in this fund is transferred. And the same were some savings from the monitoring systems. This program dealing with energy efficiency was completed, and there were some dollars left in there that were transferred to the general fund. And then turning over to page 6, on line 160, Senate File 907, this was some language that also came from Senator Nelson's bill in the Senate. And these are the savings that are being, or actually general fund revenue that using this tax analytics is supposed to bring into the general fund, a little over $133 million. And I'll let Ms. Roberts talk about the House proposal.
On line 162, you'll see the House provision, which is similar but not identical to the Senate provision. And the reason we're showing these two items on different lines is because they actually came from two different bills that were not companions, and the language is not identical, although they deal with the similar subject of tax analytics. And so you'll see the House has $133 million in revenue for this item, and the House has also included, as noted before, additional funding to the Department of Revenue in the amount of $34.8 million related to this item. The House and Senate both have language related to the federal offset program, and both are tracking $36.6 million in new general fund revenue. Another thing I should note, in the House language, these two revenue items are backed up by additional cuts to state agency general fund operating budgets. So if the department certifies that it will not be able to collect this amount of revenue, the Department of Management and Budget would have to make additional cuts to agencies. Moving down, we're getting into the non-general fund revenue portion of the spreadsheet. As Mr. Lundeen had already discussed the fund balance transfers within admin, you can see the Senate has picked up $126,000 related to that. And then both the House and Senate have language related to OET and the access fee to the state information infrastructure related to public broadcasting, public television. And there would be a loss to the OET Internal Service Fund in the amount of $170,000 a year related to that. Moving down again on line 185, you'll see the other funds. This is all other funds besides the general fund. Estimated impacts of first the workforce reduction on 185. On 188, you'd see the non-general fund impact of the deputy and assistant commissioner reduction. And then on the Senate side at the bottom, the health care savings account. And then finally on page 7, the remaining non-general fund impacts of those items on line 192, the CGIP dependent health care audits, and then the state employee salary freeze. And again, these are all estimates from the fiscal notes of the impact to all funds other than the general fund.
And I would just point out with those will just go back to the funds from which they came from. We're not making a transfer into the general fund or anything with those dollars. And then I think as you just kind of move down the spreadsheet, you can see the general fund reconciliation. You can see the on line 200, the expenditure spending changes in each bill. And you can see once you add the general appropriation reductions that we just went through, getting us down to a difference. The Senate is at 538 there. The House is at 771. So there's a difference of about $232.5 million. And then when you take the revenue changes into account and you look at the net general fund spending numbers, the Senate is $371.2 million and the House is at $601.6 million. So it's a difference of just slightly more than $230 million in net spending. And I'll let Ms. Roberts talk about the fiscal year 11 appropriations in the Senate. These were contained in a deficiency bill that was recently heard in our Senate Finance Committee.
And in the House bill includes $322,000 to the Secretary of State to reimburse counties for the cost of the recount, and that appropriation actually is included in this bill, so we counted it against the general fund target for the House.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wondering if on line 211, if somebody could explain more where that came from. I mean, the number we were working with was 322,000, and can someone explain where the 2 million plus came from?
The 2 million number showing there, that was
Mr. Chair, it's on the actually on the wrong line.
Okay.
That's the Senate or the governor's proposal related to the repeal of the land sales requirement. It looks like we just put it on the wrong line. It should belong on line 212. Okay. And that's a position that neither the House nor the Senate picked up.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions on the spreadsheet?
Mr. Chair. Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Senator Daley.
Line 162 and 163. I'm not familiar with the House file 174, the language in that bill. It refers to $34.8 million in appropriation to revenue. Is that 17.2 in each of the years 12 and 13, or how is that broken down? Where does that 34.8 go or come from? Line 162 and 163, the tax analytics bill.
Ms. Roberts, do you
have? Mr. Chair, members, you'll find that on page 2 of the spreadsheet on line 53, and it is not split evenly between the 2 years. It's there's a smaller appropriation the first year with the assumption that there would be some startup time, and then a $23.2 million in the second year.
Thank you.
Any other questions on the spreadsheet? All right, Mr. Bonner, maybe we could start out with some language here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll take you to the side-by-side comparison that's been prepared by the revisor. It's dated time-stamped April 12th, 2:01 p.m. at the top. I'll walk through the riders as well as the statutory changes. I won't call your attention. I'm just going to describe the differences. If there are non-substantive differences, I won't get into those here.
Mr. Bonner, is there any reason why the Senate is on the left and the House is on the right?
Mr. Chairman, that's because this is a Senate file.
Just a little levity here.
Yeah. There you go.
So the first changes I'll call your attention to, or differences that appear in the spreadsheet, and this is just by way of explanation, but on page R4, you'll see that the on the Senate side for the state auditor on line 3.28, the Senate just is reserves $5.18 million of the appropriation for the audit practice division in the state auditor's office. And then on R5, the Secretary of State on the Senate side on line 4.10, there is an appropriation, and this is boilerplate that's been used in past years, appropriating money from the Help America Vote Act for the purposes authorized by federal law, and the House does not have that language. On R6, there is some additional at the very bottom of the page for the Department of Administration. The Senate has some riders appropriating money for the Council on Developmental Disabilities and for office space of the legislature and veterans organizations. Those are appropriations that have been carried in rider form in past years. They're basically just boilerplate, and they would be, I think, included in the spreadsheet that way. And R7, there is some language on the House side, just 6.10. Specifying that some of the funding for public broadcasting is for grants to the Twin Cities Regional Cable Channel. Then on R8, on the Senate side, on 6.24, there is money for grants to Minnesota Public Radio, specifically for upgrades to the emergency alert and amber alert systems. The House rider that you'll see on 6.24 is a larger amount, basically for equipment grants. The on the bottom of R8 on the Senate side on line 7.6, you'll see two appropriations related to some changes that both the House and the Senate have. The Senate appropriates money for the zero-based budgeting activities through Minnesota Management Budget, and also provides an appropriation of $250,000 for actuarial studies related to the what's known as the 15x15 workforce reduction initiative. Then on the bottom of R9, on 7.24 on the Senate side, there is a reduction. This specifies how the Commissioner of Revenue must implement the reduction contained in the Senate bill, and says that the Commissioner must implement the reduction by reducing administrative support functions before reduction to compliance and enforcement. The House language is similar, but perhaps a little softer, saying to the greatest extent possible. The commissioner must avoid making reductions to compliance activities. Then there are many very similar riders on page R13 on the House side at the top, beginning on line 10.5. There is money for it's contained in both bills. The House specifies, has rider language specifying how the Hockey Hall of Fame grant must be used. And I'll add here, if there's anything additional I'm missing on some of these as I move through them rather quickly, if Mr. Shepherd would like to interrupt me, I'm quite all right with that. Moving ahead to R14 on the Senate side, you can see how the grants to the various councils are structured here through the Humanities Center. The House contains those as separate direct appropriations to the councils. On the Senate language on 11.18, there's a reporting requirement as well that would be additional. And I'll point out that on 11.28, the Indian Affairs Council is treated, it's given a direct appropriation, and there's a rider reserving money for the cultural resources specialist. And on the, you'll just see the rider at the bottom there on R14 on the Senate side, the funding for the Public Facilities Authority related to the Small Community Wastewater Treatment Program. On the bottom of R15, I think Ms. Roberts touched on this on the House side on 11.19. and maybe Mr. Shepard wants to jump in here. There's the writer specifying how the appropriation for the legislator's retirement fund should be handled. Looks like he's okay with that one, so we'll keep moving. I'll take you to R18, which is sort of it's the end of the appropriations section in both bills. If you look at 13.31 on the House side, this basically adds some matching requirements to the problem gambling appropriation. The other language is identical and specifies how the appropriation must be dispersed based on the matches. And then you'll see the language there directly underneath that in Section 36 on the House side that appropriates money for the recount costs. I have not compared it directly. It looks like it's basically identical to the language that passed from the Senate Finance Committee a few days ago and is, I believe, on general orders in the Senate. Then there are some differences beginning on R19 in how the general fund appropriation reductions must be implemented if through the savings that are provided in a variety of the provisions in the bill when you compare the House and the Senate language on R19. There is a similar listing of the sources for the savings. One thing I'll point out, and it's somewhat technical, on the Senate side, beginning on line 15.12, this specifies these reductions would go into the base budgets. And then it also contains a reporting requirement for the reductions in spending by each agency. And then the Senate side contains a similar reduction that would be implemented for the legislative budget, basically reflecting changes that are made in the state employee health care plans that would be realized in the legislative appropriation. And there's a timing component at the bottom there that basically says management budget must provide 30 days notice before implementing those reductions. Then there's some House language on the bottom. Well, it's shown at the top of page R20. Mr. Shepard might want to describe that.
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, on the top of R20, the House has a section that directs the Commissioner of Administration to determine the amount contributed by executive agencies to maintain the enterprise real property technology system in the next biennium, and then it requires each executive agency to enter into an agreement with the Commissioner setting forth the manner in which the agency would make its contributions.
Thank you. Mr. Bonner.
Then, Mr. Chairman, moving ahead into the Veterans Affairs article, Military and Veterans Affairs, this is very close to identical. There are a few small differences. On the House side, on R22, in the bottom there, you can see, I'll begin on line 17.9 on the Senate side. There is an appropriation for the Higher Education Veterans Assistance Program. That is, and both the House and the Senate have the repealer of the expiration date for that program, so both bills would continue it. The Senate provides funding for it here. The House has a standalone rider relating to the administration of the GI Bill program. On the Senate side, on R23, this was linked to the appropriation provided to continue the Higher Education Veterans Assistance Program. What this is, the language you see beginning on 17.13, is basically a cap on the open appropriation that's provided for the GI Bill program. And that was something the department had spoken about. The remaining language that you see is identical through R24, where you'll see some, these are differences on the House side that Mr. Shepard may want to comment on those. I think they basically reflect what's in the spreadsheet on the House side.
Thank you.
And then I think what I would characterize as non-substantive differences between the change to the appropriations, you'll see that at the bottom of R24, the change in past appropriations made to veterans' homes, money that's remaining from that is, I think, basically handled in the same manner. The House does make it, well, and the Senate as well, available through the end of fiscal year 2012. So that takes you through to Article 3, which begins at the bottom of R25. Mr. Shepard may want to talk there about the changes to the Legislative Pension Commission.
Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair and members, the House Section 1 on the bottom of R25 expands the membership of the Pension Commission so that it would have 7 instead of 5 members from each chamber, and it also provides that no more than 5 of the 7 members from each chamber would be from the majority caucus.
Then, Mr. Chairman, at the beginning on R26, you can see the Minnesota Sunset Act is contained in both bills. It is largely identical. There are a few minor differences on the House side on R26. I'd point out that there is some language there relating to appointments to the commission. Just some housekeeping items. A great deal of identical language. And that'll take you all the way through to page R34. And there's some language there on the House side. I'll leave the explanation to Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair and members, beginning on the bottom of R34 and continuing on to R35 is a provision from Representative Murray's House File 1063. The substantive language is on lines 29.11 through 29.21 at the bottom of R35. And it authorizes a county to have its audit performed by a certified public accounting firm instead of by the state auditor. It then has a process for the county to notify the state auditor if they are going to use a CPA firm or if they have been using a CPA firm, if they're going to move back to use the state auditor. The provision authorizes the state auditor to require additional information from the CPA firm, but requires the state auditor to accept the audit unless the auditor determines it does not meet recognized industry auditing standards.
Mr. Chairman, beginning on the bottom of R35 and moving over to R36, the Senate language contains a provision that you'll see on 28.20 that prevents any state agency from using money appropriated to it for to pay for a liaison for legislative affairs of that agency. And then there's a identical provision there, and there are a number of them kind of scattered throughout the bill related to deputy and assistant commissioners that are basically identical on both sides. And I'll leave the explanation of Section 25 on the House side to Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair and members, Section 25 on the bottom of R36 is from one of several sections from a bill, House File 192, that Representative Downey introduced that have to do with state contracts. This section provides that the head of each state agency must carry out the powers and duties in the most cost-effective manner possible, and the agency is required to determine if that is by hiring state employees or by contracting with outside sources. It then provides that if an agency decides to seek an outside vendor to do work currently done by state employees, it must permit groups of state employees to compete for that business. The next section, beginning on the last line of R36 and continuing on to R37, is from House File 299, Representative Quam's bill. I believe the companion may be on the Senate floor now as well. This SAVI program is to encourage agencies to identify cost efficiencies in their programs by allowing agencies to, at the end of a biennium, to retain 50% of unspent appropriations and to carry forward those appropriations. The bill creates a special peer review panel composed partly of employees and partly of managers, and has a process under which these funds could be spent for designated purposes upon approval of the Commissioner of Management and Budget. And that, Mr. Chair, takes you over to page R38, where Section 27 on the House side provides that to provide the public with greater access to legislative proceedings, parking spaces in front of the Capitol building would be reserved for the public.
Mr. Bodden?
Mr. Chairman, beginning on R38, there's language on both sides that's very similar and identical in most places related to zero-based budgeting. And I guess I'll take you through to page R40, where there are a few differences that emerge. The Senate language at the top of that page, you'll see basically, I think this is the way the both bills were introduced on the House and Senate side, sets aside one half of the expenditure programs in each biennium for the zero-based budgeting approach. And then I think this is conforming language related to that in subdivision 2, specifying how the governor would decide to implement that approach or which agencies would be subject to that in each biennium, and contains a reporting requirement. And then there's some differences you'll see on the House side, about line 33.14. Mr. Shepherd may want to comment on those, and for that matter could probably take us through the rest of the differences in that section, those sections.
Mr. Shepherd.
Mr. Chair, I think there's two policy differences in the section. As Mr. Bodden indicated, in the Senate bill, the zero-based budgeting would apply to half of the agency programs every biennium. In the House bill, they would phase in so that half would apply the first biennium, but then after that, zero-based budgeting would apply to all programs every biennium. That was a change the House made in committee. The second change is that Mr. Bodden was referring to on page R40, lines 33.11 to 33.16. In several places, the House requires that this budget presentation made in the governor's budget would compare the various levels of funding to zero, as opposed to just submitting three different levels of funding. And that's expressed in a couple of different ways there. Mr. Chair, I think that carries over to page R42, where on in the middle of the page, section 34 on the House side, is another section from Representative Quam's House File 299, the Savvy Bill. This just implements the provision saying that money doesn't lapse if it's carried forward under that bill. Mr. Chair, the next section is another article from Representative Downey's House File 192. It's a employee gain sharing system, which requires the Commissioner of Management and Budget to establish a program to provide one-time bonus compensation to state employees for efforts made to reduce the cost of operating state government or for ways of providing better or more efficient state services. The next cluster of sections, Mr. Chair, beginning on R43 and on the House side, all the way through R47, are all from Representative Downey's House File 681. This is a pilot program to demonstrate the feasibility and desirability of using state appropriation bonds to pay for certain services based on performance and outcomes. You'll see on page R43 there's an oversight committee established, and then the Commissioner of Management and Budget and the Commissioner of the agency with a service to be provided would enter into a contract with a service provider. There is a mechanism for return on investment calculation and a requirement that that be positive before the Commissioner pays a provider under this. There are then on page R44 provisions for this pay-for-performance program to be funded by appropriation bonds. Much of the language in this section is typical boilerplate bonding language, but I think the important policy reflected here is that these are not state general obligation bonds. They are not supported by a tax of general applicability. Rather, they are supported only by legislature pledging to pay these from appropriations that are intended to be based on savings that would be captured from these programs. So this bill would not require a three-fifths vote on the floor of the House or the Senate, because these bonds don't constitute public debt. Mr. Chair, that carries all the way over to page R47. Mr. Bodden pointed out earlier identical provisions in both positions in which relating to deputy commissioners in the middle of page R47. At the bottom of R47 is a provision from House File 1376, Representative Leidiger. This provides that for all state contracts in excess of $50,000 would require the vendor and any subcontractors to certify that they would use the federal E-Verify program for newly hired employees in the United States who would perform work for the state under the contract. Mr. Chair, the next two pages, R48 and R49, are part of Representative Downey's House File 192, the contracting article that I mentioned earlier. These change two existing sections of statute to eliminate a requirement that before an agency contract for services, it must certify that no current state employee is able and available to perform the services. The first section deals with professional and technical services. The other deals with other kinds of services. The substance of the change is identical there. And, Mr. Chair, that goes over to R50, where I believe the House and Senate provisions on the federal offset programs are very similar. The House has language in paragraph D on 42.31 requiring that an offset can't occur for a debt that that would be subject to the offset if the debt is being contested or if the time for appealing it has not yet expired. The next section, section 44, is a section contained in House File 1332. It relates to the legislative auditor, and the operative change is on page 51, line 43.17. This relates to the state fair, and it allows the audit of the state fair to be done by an independent auditor, which can be either a private auditor or the legislative auditor, instead of the current law, which mandates it be done by the legislative auditor. Maybe I'll turn it back to Mr. Bodern if he...
Mr. Bodern?
Mr. Chairman, beginning on their whole string of identical sections related to the elimination of additional deputy commissioners and assistant commissioners, beginning on R51. Then on R53, I think the salary freeze provisions are largely identical. Mr. Shepard may want to interrupt me here if there are any substantive differences.
Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair and members, I think the one difference that is substantive, and Mr. Bodern can help me if I'm missing it on the Senate side, but on page 50.20, lines 50.20 and 50.21 on the House side, this freeze does not apply to faculty or administrators in the Minsky system on the House side. And I don't believe there's a similar exclusion on the Senate side.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct, and I'll I think the next section is section 46, a House-only provision.
And that, Mr. Chair, is from Representative Stensrud's House File 756. It requires, this is for state employee performance appraisals, and it lists three components that have to be included in those appraisals, and then on page R54 requires that an employee in the executive branch may not receive an increase based on cost of living or progression to another step or lane unless the supervisor certifies that the employee's performance has been satisfactory. This section also in the House bill does not apply to Minsky faculty and administrators, and the section for employees covered by collective bargaining agreements applies to new agreements.
Mr. Bodern?
Then, Mr. Chairman, picking up beginning on R54 and with the changes shown on R55, the Senate provision there changes the state employee health insurance plan and would convert it to a health savings account eligible high deductible health plan. There are three main components that you'll see broken out there. This specifies that the state would contribute $1,500 to an individual health savings account and $2,500 to a family health savings account for state employees. And then the terms of the plan are in Clause 2. There'd be a $2,500 individual deductible and a $5,000 family deductible with a 20% cost-sharing component that kicks in after you hit that amount up to, and it specifies the maximum out-of-pocket amounts for an individual would be $3,500, $6,500 for a family. The Clause 3 contains the state contribution to the premium amount on a monthly basis, $140 for an individual and $411 for family coverage. And then that takes you over to R56. This is the reduction in the state workforce language that is similar but not identical. The House language on line 46.8 contains an interim threshold of 12% reduction by June 30th, 2013. The Senate language does not contain that and would require the 15% reduction to be implemented by the end of 2015. Another difference on the Senate side, beginning on line 37.11, the difference is in how the executive branch is defined there. The Senate language would exempt the application of these reductions to any state employees who are peace officers, to the Department of Military Affairs, the Department of Veterans Affairs, and certain employees of the Department of Corrections who spend 75% of their time in direct contact with inmates or patients, and to the State Patrol. The there is a minor difference relating to the in that you'll see on the Senate side on 37.22, just requiring the Commissioner of Management Budget to, or authorizing him to contract with the Director of MSRS to prepare the actuarial analysis for the early retirement incentive. Otherwise, those provisions are identical. If you look at R58, there's one final addition on the Senate side that is similar to language you'll see elsewhere in the bill. It just clarifies the implementation of the section would not be an unfair labor practice under PELRA. Then there are many identical sections. I'll take you down to R59, actually moving over into R60. This is additional Senate language that's related to the federal offset language that we saw earlier in Section 31 on the Senate side. This part relates to offsetting state payments against federal non-tax obligations and would be grouped together with that section. On R60, at the bottom there, you'll see very similar provisions related to the State Employee Group Insurance Plan audit. The difference here is that the House has a slightly later time frame. The Senate proposal would require a July 1st RFP, the House a September 1st date, and then on the Senate side on 42.16, the contract would be implemented by September 1st of this year. The House contains a January 1st date. And then there's another section on 42.20 on the Senate side, again confirming this is it's a matter of inherent managerial policy, and the commissioner would not be required to meet and negotiate concerning the audit. At the bottom of R61 on the Senate side is a state building efficiency proposal that requires the Commissioner of Administration to issue a request for proposals, and if the proof of concept phase is satisfactory, as shown in subdivision 3 at the bottom of the Senate language, the commissioner would then be required to enter into a contract to obtain those savings. And it does contain language authorizing payment of the vendor from the savings obtained under the contract and certain reporting requirements related to that. On R62, there's similar Senate language. It's a similar form of implementation for a fleet management request for proposal and contract, again containing a proof of concept phase and authorizing payment from the savings obtained under that proposal. Then on R63, there are similar but not identical provisions related to tax compliance. The Senate language is on line 44.16 directed at preventing and detecting tax fraud and increasing delinquent tax collection. The House language is a little more general, perhaps, and it's intended to the analysis and assistance that is obtained would be directed at identifying candidates for audit and collection activities and prioritizing those activities within auditors and collection agents' time. And Mr. Shepard should feel free to interrupt me here. Another difference I'll point out to you on the Senate side on 44.26, there's protection for the data that would be obtained in the proof of concept phase. It's a prohibition on providing the vendor with not public data, as that term is defined in the Data Practices Act. The House language on the bottom of R63, there's another significant difference. Beginning on line 52.1, it provides for a vendor financing option, but specifies that that financing option cannot be based on a contingency type of arrangement related to audits or an assessment determined by the vendor. And I don't know, Mr. Shepard may want to comment here. It looks like there are additional reporting requirements on the House side as well. And then on 52.15 on R64, if the revenue is not, the anticipated revenue is not obtained, then there's direction to the Commissioner of Management and Budget to implement the a reduction that is equal to that difference.
Anything to add, Mr. Shepard? Okay. Mr. Bonner?
Mr. Chairman, just moving on, I think on the House side, I'll just explain that. It's there's a similar provision for the federal offset program, I believe, here related to the reduction that would be required if that program doesn't yield the expected revenue of $36,600,000. Then the House and the Senate have identical provisions on R-65 related to the strategic sourcing proposal. There is a small Senate standalone provision on R-65 in Section 49 that just clarifies the amount of revenue that is expected from the federal offset program. I will point out that there is a small error on the Senate side. Section 48 is listed there. That was inadvertently included and should be taken care of with a technical amendment later on, if adopted. And then there are a whole variety of standalone House provisions that I'll turn over to Mr. Shepherd.
Mr. Shepherd.
Mr. Chair and members, on the bottom of R-65 and up on the top of page R-66 is a provision relating to the legislative auditor, and it allows the auditor to carry forward money and to use carry forward money to audit the legacy funds and some Minsky institutions. The next section, 57 on the House side, is a study that the Commissioner of Management and Budget is required to do and report to the legislature on a process to redesign and consolidate job classification plans for executive branch state employees with the goal of having no more than 50 job families. The next provision relates to HAVA, the Help America Vote Act, and it provides that if the Secretary of State determines that the state is eligible to receive additional requirements under HAVA, the Secretary would certify to MMB the amount, if any, that would be needed to meet the federal match, and could specify the portion of the match that would be taken from an otherwise unencumbered general fund appropriation to the Secretary of State. The next section on the bottom of page R66 and top of R67 requires MMB to implement a program that creates an incentive for efficient use by state employees of the CGIP insurance program. It provides that it may reward employees if per capita employee health care costs are less than estimated, and that this reward may consist of payments of up to one half of the cost savings into employees' health reimbursement accounts. The repealers, Mr. Chair, on Section 64 on the House side, all relate to the same topic. They're part of Representative Downey's House File 192 contracting, and these all repeal sections that relate to that limit the ability of the executive branch to contract out for services. Mr. Chair, the remainder of the bill on the House side all relates to Representative Downey's House File 191. It is the first section of the bill, the whole first four or five pages, is largely a technical conforming amendment, and the substance of this article is on page R71, which requires that the Chief Information Officer in the Office of Enterprise Technology is responsible for performing 11 different types of functions listed on page 59, or lines 59.10 to 59.22, for all state agencies. So it would centralize these information technology system and services in the Office of Enterprise Technology. It then provides that all state agency employees whose work primarily involves these functions would be transferred to the Office of Enterprise Technology. On page R72, the bill then creates a technology advisory committee to advise the CIO in the Office of Enterprise Technology. It specifies the membership. It creates, on page R73 at the top, a technology improvement account that, if money would be appropriated to that in a future bill, could be used to fund a project that would result in improvements to state information and telecommunications technology. And the final portion, final page, implements the transfers that I mentioned and requires the a report to the legislature on the feasibility and desirability of the office entering into agreements with the state lottery and the state radio board regarding provision of information. These two agencies otherwise are excluded from this bill. I also should mention, Mr. Chair, I passed over quickly a key provision on page R71, which provides that the after these services are consolidated in the Office of Enterprise Technology, that the CIO could allow a state agency to obtain services through a contract with an outside vendor when the value of that outside vendor can be demonstrated. That concludes the House side, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Shepard. And Mr. Bodern, thank you as well. Do we have any questions on this side-by-side that we've just gone through? Senator Gazelka.
Mr. Chair, I just wondered, maybe it's Representative Anderson, but on R38, the House 31.21, I'm just wondering if that section was perhaps a typo. Was it the Senate office building parking ramp that you meant?
Mr. Chair, no comment.
Representative Anderson. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lanning.
With the eye of having a little good humor.
Yes.
This is an annual provision that the House has proposed, so we're just following tradition here.
Any other questions? If there's no other questions on this, then maybe I'll ask Representative Lanning, who will chair the next meeting, what his thoughts are in moving forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks to the staff for preparing excellent side-by-side, both on the spreadsheet as well as the language. What I would suggest we do in our next meeting is to focus on those items that where the language is identical or almost identical, very little difference. And I would suggest members take a look at that. If you have any questions or issues about those provisions, come prepared to raise those questions. And then I think it would be advisable to open it up to members of the public who may have a question or comment or suggestion with regard to those items that are identical or only slightly different. So we give the public an opportunity to do that. And if so, if someone has an interest in one small piece of this that's nearly identical or identical in each bill, they wouldn't have to sit through and all of our deliberations in order to have that considered. And then we will have then the next category where those will be those provisions where we have major differences. Significant differences between the House and the Senate, where we will need more discussion and probably again give opportunity for the public to weigh in. And then we've got another category of those things that items that are only in one bill. They're in either the House or the Senate and not in the other. And we obviously will need to allow each body to present their case as to why that should be included, and also give the public an opportunity to weigh in on that. I don't expect us to get that far in the next meeting. I think if we get through items that are identical or only slightly different, that will be accomplishing a lot. Maybe we can take a little time to identify and talk about some of those areas that have major differences. And members, once we've had those discussions and opportunity for the public to weigh in, we will need to vote, and obviously we need at least three members of each body that would support the language and support a provision that then would appear in our conference committee report. And obviously another thought that I have is that in terms of the numbers, as we have discussion about language, that could end up changing some of the numbers. And so we have to kind of hold off on verifying and ratifying numbers until we have an agreement on language that might impact those numbers. So, Mr. Chairman, that's my suggestion for the next time we meet, and that would be either Tuesday or Wednesday, and I don't know if you folks have a week from Tuesday or Wednesday when we come back, mm-hmm. which would be the 26th or 27th. And I presume because we've got policy committees that are going to be meeting that we probably would need to look at late afternoon or evening on one of those days. So, Mr. Chairman, I would hope that you would let us know what times would work best for you, and then we will go ahead and get it arranged. We have a room that's been assigned to us over at the Capitol, right?
Or no, we're going to stay here.
Going to stay here. Well, great.
We wanted to let you just relax because
right.
you've had a cold for so long.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you. This is a great room for, in fact, the best room we have in the house. So that's great if we're going to stay here. So that's what I would suggest we do next time. And so please, over your break, do some more analysis here and things that you want to make sure we have a chance to talk about and try to iron out as we go forward. And we'll focus first on those things that are identical or slightly different and see if we can't wrap some of that stuff up.
All right. Thank you, Representative Lanning. I think that's wise. What we will let happen is our staffs get together and decide whether Tuesday or Wednesday will be good as we take a look at everybody's schedule. I think that would be the wise thing. And I'd just like everyone to know that we plan through this whole process is to give as much advance notice of our meetings so those in the public and everyone can be prepared and know and be able to come before us with any questions and comments. I can say here at the end that I look forward to the executive branch being very involved. I know we have commissioners and folks here tonight, and I appreciate that. They've all been invited to be involved through this whole process, because I think if we can do that, that we will ultimately put together a bill that our governor will be happy with as we move forward. So thanks to the executive branch folks that were here tonight. Any other questions from Representative Downey?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe just a suggestion, and I really like this kind of three-tiered categorizing of the issues. I'm wondering if maybe staff could perhaps give us a rough breakdown of what sections of the bill would fit into those categories, just so we, as we prepare for the meeting, can be focused on that. I don't know if it's plus or minus 80-90% commonality or where they want to draw the line, but that would be helpful just so we know what to look at and what not to.
Yep.
All right. Good. Thank you. Very good suggestion. I see staff shaking their head yes. So, any further questions, comments? If not, there being no further business before the committee, the meeting is adjourned.